Hi, this is Randy, and we're again have our ATX Fest coverage. And this time out, it was interviews I did with the executive producer, Chad Hodge, and one of the stars, Carlo Gugino, of Wayward Pines, the new show on Fox, which I really love and definitely recommend you guys go ahead and watch. After this, maybe this interview maybe will spark an interest and you'll go fire up your DVRs or your streaming or your pirate, whatever it is. Just go watch Wayward Pines. I think you'll like it. And before that, listen to these interviews. Thanks. All right, this is Randy Lander. We are here with Chad Hodge, the executive producer of Wayward Pines.
How's it going?
Going good.
Glad to be here.
How is your ATX Fest going so far?
It's awesome. It's awesome. It's day two. The opening night was a blast last night, and this is my first time in Austin. I'm having a great time.
Oh, great.
I love it.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you a few questions about Wayward Pines. First of all, I started watching. I watched the first episode, and I read the books.
Okay.
And I liked it, and I was like, okay, I like this, but I kind of wish it was on Netflix so I could just binge all the way through it. And then so I saved a couple of them, and then when I knew I was going to do this interview, I'm like, I got to get through this now.
Right.
And I just devoured it, so I'm completely in love with the show now.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And I'm very excited to see. So my first question for you, it's promoted as a 10-episode event.
Right.
Is there room for more, or is it going to be 10 and done?
I think we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. It is 10 and done for now.
All right. And
I say that, you know, that way because there is a beginning, middle, and an end.
Right.
There is nothing we saved for later.
Okay.
This is the beginning, middle, and there's no cliffhanger at the end in a way where you're going to feel like it's unresolved.
Okay.
In fact, you find out what the truth of Wayward Pines is at episode 5.
Called the truth.
Called the truth, yeah. Very subtle. And then in 6 through 10, it's a crazy exploration of what these people do with that truth.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm curious, I know there's 3 books. Did you use all 3 books in the 10 episodes?
All 3 books in the 10 episodes, yes.
And on that, how do you do on adaptation? What do you choose? What to cut? What to keep? What to add in? Would you see yourself very faithful, somewhat faithful?
I think it varies by the episode. I think the first 2 episodes are very faithful. And the main thing I changed in these first 5 episodes, I would say, is the storyline of his family and how his wife and son get to Wayward Pines and how they figure in. In the books, after Ethan finds out the truth, which is the end of the first book, then he realizes his wife and son have been living in Wayward Pines for 5 years.
Okay.
And that's a difference. And what I sort of changed, and with the author's permission, he and I have actually become very close, and Blake Crouch, the author, was that his wife and son come to Wayward Pines looking for him, and they are experiencing what he's experiencing and are as terrified as he is, and he has to protect them.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was curious how you balance, on a show like this, you've got to hit that balance of character and plot and also sort of just that creepy mood.
Mm-hmm.
How do you hit that balance? Like, what's the important thing to hit in a particular episode or particular moments?
Well, you know, the brilliant thing about being able to do 10 episodes all at once was that I wrote a show bible for what all 10 episodes were before we started shooting the first one. So everything was essentially planned out. And sure, things changed along the way, but there was a really strong outline for what Wayward Pines would be. And so I was able to thread the needle of those 3 things you just talked about all the way through the scripts before we started shooting, because once you start shooting it becomes a lot about production and shooting and editing and hysteria, and it's so intense that you have less time to think about the story. So to have the luxury of time before we started shooting to thread the needle of story, character, and tone was very welcome. Yeah.
And in looking at it, there's a scene in episode 3 where they're walking down the street, and you see all the houses, and you see the sort of misty mountains and all that kind of thing, that I was just sort of taken aback by how beautiful it was.
Oh, thank you.
And I wondered, what's the split between sort of on-set location and then CGI use, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Well, the town of Wayward Pines, the exterior scenes were mostly shot, especially on Main Street, were shot in a little town called Agassiz, which is about 90 minutes outside of Vancouver.
Okay.
In British Columbia. And they really have a huge mountain range encircling the town and all of that, and it is stunning and gorgeous. We do enhance the backgrounds with some visual effects, not you know, to make the mountains seem taller and sheerer so that you can't just sort of climb out.
Right, right.
But the beauty of the forests and the streets and the air and all that is very real. Yeah.
I'm curious, this is me me off script. Have you seen The Return, the French show The Return?
Yes, I
because
have.
That,
seen, yeah, I,
it's, yeah, it just yeah, reflected yeah, in my head. It's got a little bit of that same
yeah,
sort of isolated and,
isolated
and
community.
Spooky.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, my notes just freaked out on me. Here we go. So, would you recommend? There's a short called Gone that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recommend people? I don't know if you have much involvement on that.
I didn't have much involvement in that. I definitely read the scripts and gave them a few notes on it, and I saw the first cuts of the series and gave them a few notes, but I didn't have much to do with that.
Would you recommend it as sort of as a side dish, like watch it alongside or beginning or end or
watch it along? No, it's very carefully. That was the main thing that I was doing in my involvement with it, was making sure they weren't exposing things too early in their story before we expose them in ours, in the main story. So yeah, but it's great fun. It's like fan fiction.
Okay.
Yeah.
How important, I asked this question. What are some of the influences in terms of the story? I know you had a book, you had the books as source material, but it calls to mind things like Lost and Twin Peaks and Stepford Wives and the Lottery and that kind of thing.
Right.
Was there anything particular when you were writing and adapting that was in your head as to sort of the mood and the tone?
You know, there wasn't. I'm certainly fans of all the things you just mentioned and several other things that people compare the show to. But the only thing I really drew inspiration from specifically was the books.
Okay.
So I certainly am flattered at all those comparisons because I love those things. But the Children of the Corn we get sometimes.
Yeah, totally.
It's none of it is intentional.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is sort of a random question, but the setting, the haunted hospital, the small town, these are all really creepy settings. What is it about those things that makes them so creepy?
I think they're all places you sort of... that have good qualities, but ultimately you want to leave.
Okay, like, yeah, that makes
sense. You kind of want to visit a small, pretty town, but like eventually you want to go home.
Yeah.
You might need to visit a hospital because it's supposedly a place that will make you better.
Right.
But then you want to leave.
Right.
You know. And I think that's what it was sort of the beauty and the goodness of those things then gets outweighed by the creepiness of them. You know?
A couple more questions, and I'll let you go.
Okay.
The cast. This is an incredible cast.
Yes, thank you.
Does having an event series, does that make it easier to gather these people who might not have time to do these kind of shows? Does that help the Sterns get the cast together?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for two reasons. One, you know, they don't have to sign away 7 years of their life as a normal television contract would ask you to do.
Yeah.
And so they can just do these 10 episodes. And then second of all, they were able to ask me, where does my character go? What is the story? What is the truth of Wayward Pines before signing on to the projects? And I could answer them completely.
Right.
And tell them exactly what happened. Yeah. So that it gives those actors confidence in what they're signing on to, rather than just being able to read a pilot.
And if people are listening and they haven't watched Wayward Pines, what would you say to get them to watch?
I would say it is something that you will not be able to figure out the truth on your own, but I challenge you to, and I would love you to email me or tweet me if you figure out the truth before you get to episode 5. So that's a challenge, but it's a super fun ride.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Awesome.
So I am here with Carla Gugino, who I am interviewing regarding Wayward Pines, but who I have been a fan of for a long time, since Spin City.
Thank you.
And Karen Sisko is my favorite shows, and it kills me it's on DVD.
Thank you so much.
And so anything you're in, I sort of try and give a look at. And so I wound up watching Wayward Pines, and after a couple episodes, I was completely hooked.
Nice.
And I am now dying to see the rest of it. And I just interviewed Chad.
Oh, awesome.
And so I had some questions here about the basics of it. But I wanted to ask you, what was it about Wayward Pines that drew you to the project?
You know, I was doing a play at Lincoln Center at the time, and so I was doing 8 shows a week of a completely different world, and the script came across my doorstep, and I was like, wow, I opened it up, and I was just immersed in the paranoid mystery, small town, nobody can get out sort of scenario, and I ended up, and I, at that point, Matt Dillon and Melissa Leo were attached.
Okay.
That was it. And I thought, wow, this is such an amazing role for Matt. And Melissa's extraordinary, and she's going to be amazing in this role. And so I spoke to Chad on the phone. I spoke to Night Shyamalan on the phone. And what I was really, I think what really attracted me to it is I loved the heightened nature of the genre and sort of the kind of I don't know, epic elements of the show, the sort of the fact that the ideas behind it were really big ideas, mm-hmm. but that the backbone of it are these characters, yeah. and are these characters in this town. And Kate I was really drawn to because I realized I had the opportunity to play sort of three different people in a way, three different aspects of this woman, but quite extreme aspects of this woman. My job initially is to really not reveal anything.
Right.
And that's an interesting and challenging job always. And then you get moments where you're going to see her life before and sort of what she had to give up. And sort of when she was with Ethan and was having this affair and sort of when she entered Wayward Pines. And you also get to see what she's protecting so fiercely in Wayward Pines. So it just offered me a lot of exciting opportunities as an actor.
I saw on IMDb, I don't know if this is true, that you make an iPod playlist for projects. Do you still do that?
I do.
Did you do one for Wayward Pines?
I did.
So, what was some of the music that
I
was
did,
on it?
I did, but you know,
it was a while ago.
I know. I can't remember. Isn't it funny? It's so funny, too, because I do that, and then I listen to them incessantly for that period of time.
Sure.
And then I delete it. Like, yeah. I literally, it's just, that's what it was. So, I'm trying to remember I know one song that was on there was a song that Bono did called That Velvet Dress with Jules Holland Orchestra. And it's this sort of, sultry homage to Frank Sinatra, but through Bono's amazing voice. And there was something very, because in a lot of ways she harkened back to me to be like a classic femme fatale, there was an element of that kind of, that song that has this sort of sensual nature to it that I was really interested in for her. Also, there's a theme from In the Mood for Love, the Wong Kar Wai movie, that I just found really evocative and very creepy and cool and beautiful. And I don't remember anything else that was on there.
You have done a fair amount of TV and movies.
Yeah.
I noticed you moved between both. Do you have a... do you see yourself doing more TV in the future? I mean, obviously you got The Brink coming
right.
out.
You know, I love doing it all, and I do Broadway, too. Mm-hmm. So it really is... I think for me... it's interesting, because San Andreas, for example, is... made for the big screen.
Right.
That's a movie that you wouldn't ever want to do if it weren't, a
right,
film on
right.
a big screen. That being said, then what I love about TV storytelling, and I always have, but now we're just getting opportunities even more and more so as TV is getting richer and richer, and TV is sort of becoming the playground of what we used to be able to do in independent film mm-hmm. in terms of auteurs, visions, being seen all the way through and being more character-oriented, and as studios are making predominantly now just big movies. So I guess for me what I love is that each one I appreciate for different reasons.
Yeah.
You know, and in the same way that I'll always go where the great roles and the great collaborators are. So, even when I did Spin City, I did Spin City just before I did Snake Eyes with Brian De Palma and Nick Cage. And then, I've always done and I was doing Chicago Hope before I did Spy Kids and Sin City, and for me it's always been, I've never sort of let those barriers, and now it's really not even a barrier anymore, but get in my way.
She told me to wrap it up. I'm going to say one last question. So, it's interesting you mentioned indie film, because I remember Center of the World is one that I very much remember you being, and that was such a raw performance. It was really amazing.
Thank you. You're so, I'm so appreciative. That was, I would say for me, and I have played a lot of roles, as mm-hmm. you know, weirdly, one of my favorite characters I've ever gotten to play.
Really?
I think because... I think I'm always the best when the most is being asked of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was so... I don't know how else to say it besides balls to the wall. Like, it was so... There was nothing I could do to protect myself and to be a certain way or look a certain way or be perceived in a certain way. Or I just had to really be absolutely true to her. And it was a real testament to me and a reminder to me of what I want to be as an actor in terms of that kind of abandon and risk-taking. So I really appreciate you mentioning that.
So I hope you guys enjoy those interviews. I have to say, I've been a fan of Carla Gugino since going back to Spin City, and I'm maybe mild crush on her. So to get to talk to her and tell her how much I love Karen Cisco, to which she reached out and grabbed my hands and was very, very appreciative, and so I'm not washing these hands again. So thanks for listening, guys. TV Dudes out.